I want to open these proceedings with a thought, because me and Jacob were talking a little bit about Harry Potter before you got here. You know who I think did a perfect job in those movies? Gilderoy Lockhart. I think he nailed it to the wall.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. All right. Then back to Vance. I like that face.
Right on.
I spend most days talking about Harry Potter, so it's not abnormal at all.
I am not judging you at all, man.
Hey, you're listening to Ray Tessie from Starship Republic on Comic Pop Library. Live long and prosper.
Another episode of Comic Pop Visits, brought to you by Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Lenny,
Jonathan,
Jacob,
Logan.
And in today's episode, we are talking with Vance Major. He is the actor of Starship Valiant and the producer of the upcoming fan film Star Trek Melbourne. So, Vance, thank you for coming on.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are we doing?
Doing good. To make mention, this is a production from Shadowstorm Studios. And Vance, you want to mention who the director is? Because I can't remember off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
Director is Jeremy Minard.
Jeremy Minard. So Jeremy, give a shout out to him and Shadowstorm Studios for doing this project with him. Today, we're going to talk about Vance's upcoming fan film, but also talk about the Star Trek guidelines that CBS and Paramount have sent down to the fan film creations and creators. So we're going to kind of do a mix of everything. So hold on to your hats. This might be a two-parter, because if we get to talking, you know what happens here. So, but hopefully everybody will have fun and enjoy the discussion. And Vance, for your information, Jacob, I don't think you can actually see him. I think it ends at Jonathan over there, but he just recently joined the crew as of a couple of weeks ago. So
right on, Matt.
So he's joining us tonight as well. He's been in projects with fan films, and he's actually in studio stuff with his university as well, so he's kind of familiar with this stuff. So to start off, you want to discuss a little bit about Melbourne and what it's about?
Well, Melbourne is it takes place in the Star Trek universe. It takes place after Kirk's 5-year mission, right before the TMP timeline, and it's basically fan film. It's not like a lot of the fan films out there that you know, they try to reach a lot of likes and you know, get noticed out there. A lot of the bigger fan films try to get that way. It's a story from the heart, very private story, and something that we want to share with our friends. I don't know, it's something that we Jeremy and I had talked about a year ago, and you know, something that we had come out of Starship Defiance, a project that Brian Anglin had brought us on board and kind of wanted to talk to about. And when he had gone through several rewrites and whatnot, and that kind of never really took off. And Jeremy and I discussed, and we kind of went our own direction and decided let's do this project Melbourne. And so we decided to do our own stuff, and I don't know, the story we came up with, each character, we took about 3 months to do, just really world building with what we were doing. And then we decided, you know, the story, you know, what story we wanted to do. I don't know, a lot of the stuff we did with Melbourne, it was just world building before we even got to the story. And I don't know, it's just world building, a story. I don't know, it's a very different Star Trek story. I don't know, you've seen part of the script. What did you make of it? Based on what you've seen.
Well, I think it wasn't necessarily the script, but the ship itself has a little bit of a unique design, with the saucer section having kind of sections kind of concave, and mm-hmm. It looks like you put laser turrets in those areas, possibly, so it looks like it's going to be more of a warship than a scientific ship.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I gathered from that aspect of the model. With what little we saw of the script, I don't know. We were kind of limited, to be honest, from what you're doing with us.
I don't want to say anything about the script, but and I don't want to give anything away, is what I'm saying. But from what I've read of it, I do understand what you're saying. You're trying to take it in kind of a different direction, and do some things in it that were pretty provocative. I'm wondering if these new guidelines aren't going to limit the ability to do some of those things that you wanted to do, especially with a particular part of the script that we've been privy to for secret reasons. So, like, the one that really, I think, hits that, and it may not matter. It may be something that, which one is it? 4-3? Maybe it's on the... There's so many regulations. Okay, yeah, the fan protection. Number 7... And we'll go... Can we just skip around?
Yeah, we can skip around. That's
no problem. The fan production must be family-friendly and suitable for public presentation. And I'm not saying that that wouldn't be, because those things, though, like I say, probably more provocative than a lot of what Star Trek that you get, you know, to a degree, you see some of that kind of stuff in the Star Trek universe. And obviously, it's not nudity, profanity, obscenity, pornography, or drugs, or alcohol. You know... But there are elements that are very adult. So is that something that, you know, because of, you know, we've discussed kind of in private. What I'm trying to say is that it is a more provocative storyline than you get from a lot of fan films. Are you worried that CBS Paramount is going to have problems with Melbourne because of its, I'm going to say grittiness? It's a grittier story. Can you feel that? From what you've told me about it, I feel like it's going to be a gritty, very... passionate story in a lot of ways, and that I wonder if that's the only rule besides the length thing, which is obviously an issue for anyone that's trying to do an you know, you want to tell a story, you're going to need some time, and so I mean, well, you're going to have to skip through all the slow parts. You know, no 5-minute close-ups of going and looking at the starship. None of that.
here's the concern. And before we delve into all the guidelines, before the John Van Kitters came on and discussed these issues, Jeremy and I had discussed actually walking away from Melbourne entirely. We discussed doing Melbourne as an entirely different project, because Melbourne, the story stands on its own. We always said that Melbourne stands as a project with just a Star Trek wrapper. And you can take that wrapper off and place it in a Battlestar Galactica universe, or a, you know, just an entirely different sci-fi universe. Or, you know, you could place it in just a regular old, you know, whatever universe, just change the wrapper. So Star Trek didn't need to be...
You can make up your own universe and slap $10 on the package and make money.
Exactly. And then that's exactly it. And we had the night before before John came on and started talking, we had actually retooled it. So in case he didn't speak what we were liking, we could just be like, screw it, we're doing our own thing. And so that was a very serious possibility for us. And honestly, listening to everyone's negativity about the guidelines, like, my love for Star Trek was starting to die. When I first read the guidelines, I tried to be a very positive person online. I tried to laugh. I tried to joke. And I even put up a post saying, hey, Melbourne's going forward. It's not a big deal, guys. Stop tripping. It's not a big deal. We're going forward. But as the days went forward, my depression and negativity, listening to everyone else's negativity, is just like, oh, God, this sucks. And you tend to just let that negativity just beat the hell out of you. And so by the time the VP came on, you know, it's like I was so ready to walk away from Star Trek and my love and my passion, because it's like when all you hear is negativity, you're just like, ugh, I no longer care. So to answer your question, listening to what he had to say, it's very apparent that they're not going to micromanage these fan films. They're not going to be watching the films and say, hey, you were 15 minutes and 30 seconds over, so you know what, we're gonna sue you. That's not what they're doing. If you do something that happens to cross the line, as much as they'll do is they'll simply send you a cease and desist letter, which means, hey, take it down, you crossed the line. But they're not going to do something to sue the pants off you. That's not what they're trying to do. Anyone who's listened to this interview with an open mind, not simply listen to it with a negative attitude, but listen to it with an open mind, we'll hear what he's saying. Me, myself, I've listened to it with an open mind, and I'm like, you know what? I'm hearing what he's saying. Me with a script and knowing what I know that I want to do with the 6 episodes, I do have to change some things in here. My original idea for everything was, you know, continuing, you know, a cliffhanger at the end of each episode. There was some things that I had that was not family friendly. My attitude for Melbourne was an R-rated Star Trek. Obviously, with the family friendliness of it, I've got to redesign some things. Now, can I still do some of the things in here? Yes. Is it very possible to tell the same story that I wanted to tell? Yes, I can. That just simply means I have to change certain things. Your guys' scene that you guys have, I can still tell that very same thing. Our makeup artist, Nate Bright, is very much a genius on what he does. The reason being is, like I was telling you guys when you guys were over at my house hanging out doing our zombie thing, he doesn't use gore. And he hates the fact that a lot of people in the makeup world use gore. Like,
they want shock value.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll use like way too much blood, or they'll use like intestines when they don't need to. And the thing about it is that really makes him mad, because he's like, the human body isn't like that. Now, what exactly is family friendly? That is really a shade of gray. And that's one thing that John, when he got on and gave the interview, he was like, there's a lot of shades of gray in these guidelines that when you sit back, we left them there on purpose. Now, I like that. Not because I'm trying to manipulate the system, but because when I sit there, I'm like, this seems like a dude that I would sit down and have a cup of coffee with and be like, hey man, let's talk Star Trek. And when you sit there and listen to his interview, this is a guy that loves Star Trek. So he's not sitting there trying to take down the middle guy, or little guy. You know, he's sitting there and he's like, look, we just don't want everybody, you know, like he said, you know, it was almost like an arms race for guys who are trying to get all the big name actors into their films. And for people like me, I'm sitting there going, you know what, I can live with a 30-minute, you know, fan film. That's what I was doing anyway. Yeah, I have to cut it in half for 15 minutes, but it's an annoyance, but I can live with that. I can live with having a self-contained film. Yeah, it sucks that I can't do a continuation, you know, or a cliffhanger, but I can tell a self-contained story, which a self-contained story is just, I have to have a beginning and I have to have an end, which means my next film has to have a beginning and has to have an end, which I can still use the same set of characters, which, you know, with exposition, I shouldn't have to have the audience feel like they have to have seen something before this film starts, and they shouldn't have to feel like when the film ends they have to see something else. You know, it's kind of like Independence Day Resurgence, where it basically felt like setup for Independence Day 3. You know, that's not what your film should have to feel like. And so, if you know, following those guidelines, that's what every one of your films should feel like at the end of your 2 15-minute segments. So following those guidelines, yes, the crew of the Melbourne can tell their self-contained stories. So when people sit there and say, no, it's a one-and-done deal and this is going to be the end of fan films, you guys are overreacting shut the hell up. Stop with crap. No, seriously, like, that's how Facebook overreacts to drama, and I hate the fact that it gives every idiot with a keyboard a voice. And sadly, sometimes I am one of those idiots. Yeah, so
I think we all are. One thing I was going to say, when I first walked in here and Richard handed me these guidelines, I'd already heard a lot about it from Promenade, the page on Facebook. Throw that out there for you, Vance. Pretty cool page. It's public page. The thing I said was, you know, here's the facts. You know, that the big name actors were in Star Trek fan films. You know, there have been a lot of Star Trek fan films made. It's been a long time ago, and there's a lot of them in production right now. Look, one of them sat there and made tons of money on GoFundMe. That's why this happened. This is a money issue, and that's what I said when I first walked in here. These are guidelines. It says right here, they are guidelines to avoid objections. But you want to not get sued, don't make money. And that's the bottom line. Like you were saying, you know, the worst they're going to do is send you a cease and desist letter, unless you track $1 million from GoFundMe. Then they're going to have an issue with it. You know, it's these big films, just like you said, that are going to really get raked, because they are kind of violating what a fan film should be. It shouldn't be for profit at all. It's really easy with fan books, because you write a book, you put it on the internet, and you tell people, copy it, give it away, do anything you want, but do not sell it. I'm not selling it. It's based on this person's universe, and you're good. That's it. It can be anything you want it to be. You know, in most, there's exceptions to that, but that's pretty much the attitude, because it's all about the money.
Well, here's the thing. When you read the guidelines, you know, they say, you know, $50,000, you know, you're allowed to raise $50,000 for every 15 minutes.
Right. Do you wish you had
50 minutes? I look at, you know, the Melbourne stuff, and I'm like, my budget, you know, like I've told you guys when you guys were over hanging out with me. Well, I just made that sound really creepy.
It's cool, man. When you're by hanging out at our place, hey.
Right? I made it seem like, you know, we were hanging out in my basement and in my mom's house, you know. No, like I said, my budget's $3,000, you know, for every film. You know, that's one a year. And I'm making six, you know, I'm making six of them, you know. Yeah. So, you know, that's $3,000 a year. And they've allowed $50,000 for every 15 minutes. And so that's $100,000 for every 30 minutes. What the hell do you need that much for? Like, what? Well, you know, so for me, I'm going there going, that's a lot of money. But you've still got people going, man, they're raping the goat on this one. I'm like, what goat? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was, I think it was a case of, then I'll shut up for a little while. I think it was a case of one film going way too far and raising CBS Paramount's proverbial tail feathers. No. Because, well, yeah, go ahead.
And that's exactly it. You know, it's like, you know, I won't sit here and turn this into a soapbox session bashing one film or three films or whoever. Like, I won't do that. Certainly, if you want to see that, you know, there are groups out there or other podcasts.
Find them everywhere.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be hard to make.
You know, but, I mean, certainly when you read these guidelines, you can see who these are pointed at. And this is intended to stop certain things from happening again. When I look at these rules, I'm like, this does not apply to me. Yes, it does affect me on some level, but nothing that I can't come back from. And here's the thing. When I first read the guidelines on the 23rd, and I start, you know, there was a list of fan films. I was on that list. There was a list of, I think, around 50.
Right.
Fan films. And I read the list, and I think I was maybe one of four that was actually still going. Every other one was either suspended or suspended indefinitely. And it kind of felt like Wolf 359, when, you know, like you saw the shipyard, you know, when you saw the ships just in pieces, and you're just like, oh, your heart sunk. And then on the 29th, when you started seeing films come back and say, hey, we're progressing, going forward again. We're coming back from the dead. And I was like, oh, so hope is coming back. And again, it's because the rules aren't that bad. They're not meant to destroy us. It's meant to prevent certain things from happening again. Now, again, there are certain people who blindly follow a certain individual and a certain film. It's almost like a cult-like status, and I'm not going to judge them, but it's scary to the amount of, you know, it's just, it's scary, man, because it's like...
That apparently happened to Harry Potter.
Man, if you followed me like that, I'd get mace and pepper spray. God, get your head out of my ass. You're just, ugh. You know, but some people live by that and they feed off that. For me, it's just, but so for me, it's like, if I gotta change some things with my film to help prevent these atrocities from happening again, great, because that guy's mentality, that is scary. That is flipping scary. bad things.
And we've gone on about 20-some-odd minutes. I want to mention that Vance, and we are making some references, the podcast he's mentioning is the Star Trek official podcast. It's called Engage, hosted by Jordan Hoffman. And he's talking about John Van Critters, that he's from CBS and Paramount, that was actually kind of going through the guidelines and trying to explain them a little bit. So just kind of a point of reference for everybody listening out there.
Right.
Well, and even like, because I listened to that podcast, and while he's sitting there, he's talking about the $50,000 that you can raise. That's more of like a, you go to a Kickstarter or one of those GoFundMe pages, because he even says if you've got a rich uncle out there that wants to hand you $1 million, go nuts.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's talking about publicly raised funds, right, that people know about. You know, those are public forums where every dollar you make, it's announced to the world. So when people did that, you know, it was noticed. Yeah, it's like, you know, if you're self-funded, you know, you want to spend $1 million on a pin, spend $1 million on a pin. Who's gonna stop you?
Well, and that's the thing, like, he brought up a really good point where, you know it was more about the perks than it was about donating to a movie. You know, and that's a really good point. Some people won't donate unless they're like, well, what perks do I get? You know, to me, it's like, I hate the idea of perks. You know, some people, that's all they're into. They're like, well, what patches do I get? What, you know, what videos do I get? What do I get? And it's like, dude, seriously, help us make the film. You know, if you don't want to help, well, then you're a greedy jerk.
Look, you know, are you a nerd or not? That's what we got to know. Are you a nerd or not?
Right? Like, what? It's just...
Well, I want you guys to know something. This did affect me. It affected the hell out of me, because all of this talk since the 23rd of June has really screwed over my, like, so much overshadowing. Like, I just released my first book ever, and, like, not that much talk about it, you know, so...
One of the things we've been talking about, the money, also kind of involved with the money, is the stance here... And I'll kind of paraphrase it to a degree, and we've kind of mentioned it before we got on air. Where the people that are involved with it cannot—they have to be amateurs. They must be a fan. They can't be the creators, actors, anything.
Number five
of the Star Trek film series, films production of CBS or Paramount licenses. So, in a sense, he's leaving a little bit of legal room for professionals. Because he just specifically says Star Trek, CBS, and Paramount.
Oh, I didn't read that.
And here's
that affect you or some of the others that like that.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I've already lost three actors. Melbourne was hit pretty hard by this stance. Two of our actors were SAG.
Okay.
You know, they had done this, you know, volunteering, and that really.
Right.
Another one of our actors worked for CBS.
Ah.
In the past,
sure.
He worked on Buffy the Vampire Slayer as a vampire. You know, really good guy. But I've known this guy since, you know, we were in like the sixth or seventh grade. Big Star Trek fan, but he's been with us since the beginning. He was one of the very first people I cast, and you know, very enthusiastic Star Trek guy. You know, he's just greatest guy, friendliest guy you'll ever meet. And I had to call it. He was one of the guys that was like, hey, man, let's just make our own franchise. Because he was like, if I can't be part of Star Trek, this sucks. You know?
Our own.
But at the end of the day, you know, when I looked at these guidelines, I was like, you know, if we have to retool Melbourne to be our own franchise, we got to push our this thing back another year, and it's not, it's just not fair to us or the other cast and crew or to our, you know, to my friends on Facebook, you know, the people I'm making, basically making this thing for, you know, it's not fair to anybody, you know, to wait another year to do this, you know, as much as I'd love to, because then we own everything and we could be like, hey, it's great. But we've already sunk a year of our time into this. It's just, as much as it sucks, let's just keep it what it is. And he was like, hey man, cheers. That's great. Right. And to me, anyone that starts off with bad news with cheers, I'm like, you know, it's like the friendliest gut punch you can have, you know? Right. And so, well, you know, I told him, I said, you know, because he's friends with, you know, the people at CBS, and he was like, hey, let me see if I can talk to them and see if I can be like, you know, at least a background, you know, because that's not acting technically. So let me see if I can do that, and if so, cool. If not, no harm, no foul. And I was like, well, hey, worst case scenario, if you can't, then at least come visit the set every year that we're filming. I mean, because you're still part of the Melbourne family, come visit set, because this isn't on you. It's not a reflection on you. It's just their damn politics changed. So right. Come visit the set, you know. And I mean, there was no bad intent, you know, there was no bad, you know, there was no bad feelings. There was no, you know, there was no bad intentions or nothing. It was just, you know, it was the friendliest, again, friendliest gut punch that you could have. So, I mean, it did affect us, you know, and with the other two actors, you know, again, like, you know, it was just, you know, it was so sad. But I completely understood. It's like, hey, we can't risk this, because if someone, you know what we were doing out of fun and passion, you know, we can't do this now. And I was like, hey, I completely understand. If someone's watching you, you don't want to do something now. You know, it's like, if the neighbors are watching, you don't want to put a bag of flaming dog crap on someone's porch now. It's not the best time to do that. You know, I completely get it. You know, so it's like, again, you know, it's, you have to retool on some aspects, but. You know, it sucks, because it's like, you know, for me, again, you know, I wasn't trying to be, you know, hey, we got all these professionals, look at us, blah, ha, ha, because I don't have a Facebook page for Melbourne. I don't have a website for Melbourne. I'm not trying to be like, hey, we've got the most likes and the most clicks and the most money. And the it was just a film for my friends that I wanted to do for passion for Star Trek. You know, my love for a franchise that helped build my character and for me, and I, you know, I wanted to bring other fans together, and that's all that it was. But because of these guidelines, and because of somebody helped make these and push other people's hands to make these, you know, it changes things. So it, you know, I'm not mad, it's just, it sucks, you know, that this had to be the way it is, you know. So you got to take the good with the bad, you know. So, you know, it is what it is.
And to me, I'm hoping maybe CBS might loosen those a little bit if the actors or producers or special effects people, if they don't take any compensation, they're doing it as a true fandom. Hopefully, they might kind of loosen that a little bit in the future. But right now, it is what it is. So
yeah, we have another friend that is was involved. We just got involved with working on a picture with him, and he is a professional. There's, if they don't loosen that number five guideline, he's out. His entire film has to be scrapped because he is a professional, you know, makes a living at it. Not at making Star Trek films, but at making different films, and you know.
He's
forget everything
sunk
else.
A lot of money into it.
Well, yeah. Forget everything else. Just, you know, he had to. You know, he has to. If they don't, if he wants to follow these for avoiding objection, then he just can't play. He has to take his marbles and go home. And so that's where I'm like, well, you know, the thing is like, if he doesn't make any money, if you know, can he still do it? Because it's he himself. It's not. It's his project, and he's the one that's the professional. So he can't fire himself.
That's a hard one to get around, so hopefully they'll loosen that up.
Well, the thing about it is, it says the fan production must be a real fan production, i.e. creators, actors, and all of the participants must be amateurs, cannot be compensated for their services, and cannot be currently or previously employed on any Star Trek series, films, production of DVDs, and with of DVDs, or with any of CBS or Paramount Pictures licensees. Yep. Here's the thing. There's a little bit of wiggle room with that. And again, I'm not sitting there saying I'm leading any boycott or sitting there saying, you know, if anybody says, hey, well, Vance Major said. So please don't misinterpret that as I'm leading any type of rebellion in case any CBS person's listening. The way I see it is, if someone is going to film school to be a director and they're like, man, I really want to make a Star Trek film and I am a professional because I am going to school for a film and I have one or two films under my belt, technically I'm a professional, even though I'm not like, you know, Steven Spielberg. I think it's okay because you're not working for CBS or Paramount and you haven't worked for Star Trek. You're not on their DVDs. You're not on, you know, you're not on any of their stuff.
The first part of it, though.
What's that now?
Because it was using ors instead of ands, that first part of it's still a problem.
The professional aspect?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact is that he's not going to film. Our friend isn't going to film school. He's made 8 movies and he was paid for them. Yeah. You know, yeah, he's a professional filmmaker.
But it's an independent.
He's an independent.
Paramount, so I don't know if that gives him some wiggle room or not.
But it's still professional status, though. Yeah, I mean, the fact that they have to be amateurs, you know, like that, I don't know. Like, see, the thing is he could interpret that as, well, you know, I'm not really making any money off this. I mean, I still have to, you know, mow lawns every Saturday to get make ends meet. You know, so maybe he could get by, you know, but.
And that's the thing. Like, it's like where do you draw the line in that regard? Like, did you make, you know, because it's like, did you make $50 on a film and you're jockeying to register at McDonald's? Or are you Steven Spielberg making, you know, buku bucks and now you want to make a Star Trek film? Like, there's a big difference in that regard, because I know, like Jeremy, technically Jeremy makes, you know, money on his films that he does, but that dude's eating ramen all the time. He's not making I mean, so again, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's like John said in the interview he gave, they look at the intention of the film. So I have to believe in the intent of CBS. I have to believe they're going to look at your film. I have to believe that they're going to look at the intent of what you're trying to do. And I cannot believe if they look at your film, they're like, you know, these guys are honestly trying to make good Star Trek. They're not trying to make profit. They're not trying to compete with us. They've never talked shit on J.J. Abrams.
You know? Whoops.
Well, that eliminated quite a few.
Well, he said,
right.
You know, they're going to look at the intent. They're not going to micromanage. You know, and that's also another thing. You know, if you're not being compensated, you know, it's like there's a big difference between what they're trying to stop and, you know, if you're coming on, you know, it's like I have to believe that if your intent is honest and noble, that they're not going to crush you.
Right.
You know, right. Hold on just a second.
So. You wanted the macaroons, yeah. They're in the rectangular purple box. God, I love those things. Oh, macaroons.
That's what they're called then?
Huh. Yeah, with the caramel and the caramel and the coconut and the chocolate. Oh, yeah, buddy.
Vance's face.
We're talking about Girl Scout cookies. Just leave me alone, Vance. I can talk about what I want.
His face when he walked in. He's like, I'm always walking in on the most awkward conversation.
If you walk in on conversations with me, it's going to happen a lot.
I like it. I don't mind. I'm keeping it in my head for later on. All right.
So we're back to recording.
Yeah, we're back to recording. Is there anything else anybody wants to bring out in specific points on the guidelines?
That was the only ones I was really worried about. The rest of them seem pretty legit and fair.
Yeah.
And like I say, you know, I agree with what you say. I didn't get to listen to the interview yet. Unfortunately, I've been super busy. But I can understand the feeling of what you're saying is that if you're really a Star Trek fan and you're really in this for the love of Star Trek and to make a fun fan film that you can be proud of and passionate about and not to make money and not to do the bragging rights and all that stuff, then they're pretty much not going to mess with you no matter what the guidelines say. So that makes me feel better from what I've read from my friend. It makes me feel better for you. And I think that, you know, as long as, you know, we don't somehow magically raise over $50,000 for every 15 minutes we want to do, I think we're good.
and that's the thing. Like, I hope if somebody's out there that's like, man, I really want to give this fat man $50,000 for this film, I will not tell you no. Wink, wink. But I mean, come on, let's be a realist here. Nobody's gonna give me $50,000, and I don't expect you to. Like, you know, it's but these people who are out there, you know, and I've had people that have sent me, you know, man, let's boycott Star Trek together. Wow. And even when I was angry and my love for passion, you know, my love for Star Trek was kind of dying out because all that negativity from the draconian rules, you know, and listening to that, you know, you can only take so much negativity before you're like, oh, I give up. I'm so sick of hearing it, you know, and the day of social media, it's hard to tune the shit out, especially when you're attached to it because it's in the palm of your hand all the time. And given the fact that, you know, I have 5,000 Facebook friends and I have 700 and some odd followers, you know, it's like I hear it all the time. And so when you hear it and you're pounded by it all the time and you're like, oh, I just can't take it, you know, so that negativity gets to you. You know, even when my love for Star Trek was kind of dying, I was like, you know, I don't really feel like seeing the movie. And I'm not, you know, I never planned on getting the streaming site anyway, you know, the Star Trek streaming, because I'm like, that just seems like a money grab to me. And I, no offense, offer me something else on CBS besides just Star Trek, and I might consider getting more streaming, because there's nothing else you have that makes me want to just grab your streaming stuff. So right. Offer me something else besides Star Trek, so it doesn't seem like a money grab. I mean, it's just, you guys, you seem like you're money hungry. But, you know, when you're pounded by all that stuff, and then you have someone saying, boycott, 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 it's like, dude, get off me. You know, so I just started unfriending those people that were just pushing me to boycott, because it's like, even though I'm unhappy, dude, you're making me even worse, and I don't want to be around those type of people. And like today, you know, like I had 9 people I unfriended, you know, last week because of that. And today I went out and bought 9 Star Trek books to compensate myself for those 9 people I lost. Ironically enough, I've made those, you know, I made 9 more friends for those 9 people I lost. So I didn't really lose out because I'm like, I'm happy, you know, especially the fact that, you know, the rules don't really bother me. I'm still making my film. I'm making it under the guidelines. I'm happy. And I got 9 books, you know, so screw the negativity, you know. That's so good. It's like, that's great. You know, so
there we go. Jacob had a point about Jonathan Kidders that I think is valuable and should be mentioned, so we're not saying we're all negativity about this, but your point about John that you mentioned between the shows that I think was really good.
Yeah, just as I was listening to the interview and I was listening to him kind of tell his story, you know, this is a guy that he grew up with Star Trek and grew up watching Star Trek and loving it. And he seems, and, you know, he got into a position of power now, and he seems to be, he's trying to be the guy that keeps the suits at CBS and Paramount from getting involved. Because if the suits have to get involved, that's when everyone gets crushed. And this goes from being Star Trek to being The Empire Strikes Back and we're the Rebellion. It's not going to go well for us. So, you know, that's kind of what I get. You know, that's kind of the feel I got from him. And so, you know, I listened to the podcast. I read the guidelines, and I think they can be worked with. But it doesn't seem like they're going to be watching everyone do everything. And as soon as you step out of line, out comes the whip. You know, they're going to give you a lot of wiggle room as long as you don't force them to get involved.
And I think that's what the guidelines are intended for. After I listened to the interview as well, that's kind of what I got from it as well.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, I mean, he goes so to say that himself, you know, he said, you know, point blank, we're not going to micromanage, we're not going to sit there and nitpick through all the fan films. You know, it's like, first off, you've got to realize that these people have lives, you know. Yeah, they have jobs, and part of their job is to oversee things, but they're not going to sit there and nitpick and say, oh my God, is that phaser a type 2 or type 1? Is that break continuity? Is that do that? Like, first off, they don't care. I mean, unless you're sitting there affecting their pocketbook, they don't care. Right. You know, first off, these guys are, you know, he is a fan, yes. But unless you affect their pocketbook, they're basically going to let you go. And the only reason why they got involved to begin with was because it affected their pocketbook, the bottom line.
Yep.
And a lot of the fans out there who are sitting there making this personal, you know, acting like, oh my goodness, we're the little guy and the big guy is oppressing us. You know, no, they're really not. Yes, it does affect some of the bigger fan films, but for, you know, it makes everybody kind of back on the same page.
If anything, and they're trying to level the playing field for the little guy.
Well, yeah. And the thing about it was, you know, does it hurt? Yeah, kind of, because there are a lot of fan, you know, there are a lot of the bigger ones that I do enjoy. But the thing about it was, there's a lot of the little ones that I enjoy out there. You know, surprisingly enough, before I went to SoonerCon, because I did a panel for Starship Valiant, you know, we all went down to SoonerCon to do that. I actually, when I got off work, I got off, it was about 11:30 when I got off, and I didn't have to leave till about 3 in the morning to drive down to SoonerCon, but I started seeing some of the...
I would have slept. I said, Jesus, I would have slept.
Yeah, dude, I don't. Dude, sleep is not a luxury fan film producers get a lot of. But I started seeing some of the more extreme producers start talking about, oh, I got to take down my film, man. Got to take it down because they're going to sue us all. I mean, that's how crazy that some of us have been getting, because, you know, the mass hysteria, it was almost like Orson Welles back in, you know, the War of the Worlds type stuff. Like, what? Even though there was no rash thinking behind some of the stuff. So I was like, screw it. So I started downloading some of the films because I'm like, I don't want these things to just go the way of the dinosaur.
You
want
to actually be able to still have them if they start taking them down.
Good job.
Exactly. Good job. And so, you know, I got probably about maybe a half hour sleep, maybe 45 minutes before I actually... Yeah, I was gritting my teeth the entire drive down there. Again, my wife was like, hey, are you excited? I'm like, yeah, I'm fucking excited. I'm excited. But, you know, and then as soon as I got back from SoonerCon, and we only stayed there for the convention and then came back home. And again, I'm fighting fatigue the whole time, you know, swerving like, oh, got to stay up. but I got home, and as soon as I got home, started downloading more fan films just because I wanted to make sure that nobody took them down. Because again, you're seeing fan film websites taken down. You're seeing fan film fan pages on Facebook getting taken down. Again, people are getting panicked because they didn't take a step back, breathe, and say, I'm going to wait till I hear what CBS actually has to say. Now, we all knew this was coming, but they didn't take a step back. And so, yeah, my computer's full of fan films that I've been watching, and I'm just like, man, I love all of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are, you know, higher fan films that I'm like, this is good. And I'm seeing lower fan films that I'm like, oh, this is just as good. People, they're not giving the smaller ones the credit that they're due. But these guidelines, it puts everybody on the same playing field. And again, they just, they like what they like, and they don't want to give anyone else a chance. Again, if they just look, see what else is out there, they would find that there is room for more people. They just don't want to. And again, it's the David and Goliath mentality that they feel like they're oppressed when that's not necessarily the case.
Before we dive into Melbourne, you mentioned this a little bit and have you go a little bit further. I don't know if I don't know if you've spoken with Michael King or not, but you are part of Starship Valiant Fan Film. You want to mention how that's affected that production?
Starship Valiant. Well, the thing with Starship Valiant, and we had talked about, you and I had actually talked about this a little bit earlier. The thing with Michael King, and the thing with him, he kept such a cool head the entire time. Me, I kind of joined in with the paranoia and the depression and everything. And he is honestly one of the most respectable people that I know. We went down to SoonerCon, and honestly, my head wasn't really in the game for SoonerCon or Star Trek or any of the stuff. And I had been waiting, you know, over a year to be on panel. I was supposed to be on panel last year for Starship Valiant, and I wasn't able to make it due to work. But this year, you know, I had waited to go. And then two days before SoonerCon, they dropped the guidelines. And so on my way down there, I'm so angry about going, you know, because of the guidelines and everything. So I get down there and everything, and and Michael and I are talking, and his mentality of it, of, you know, the rules and everything, he's like, you know, he wasn't angry about it. He was, could tell he was frustrated, but he wasn't really angry. He was just kind of like, you know, I wish we had known that, you know, we could only tell a half hour story, you know, because we could have done that. And, you know, future episodes or whatnot, you know, we could do that. But, you know, it's just the story that we have, you know, it kind of needed to be told in an hour slot, you know, so I'm not really sure how we're going to do it. But I told him, I was like, you know, if we ever, you know, if we can't shoot this, you know, if we can't shoot anymore or whatever, you know, if, you know, whatever we have to do, you know, if we can't do it, you know, just pardon me.
It's all right.
I'm kind of getting a little emotional over the whole thing. Forgive me.
Well, Michael, when he was on our podcast here, he was really generous with his time. We met him a couple of times now. Like you said, he's really cool-headed. He tries to take everything as it goes. And I think, I don't know if he could possibly go back in and re-edit and maybe try to do it a little bit differently. I know a lot of the actors and people behind the scenes, it might be a little bit hard to get back and try to reschedule that, but maybe the possibility is doing something like that. I don't know.
Well, the thing with Michael is, you know, he's such a great storyteller, you know. You know, he's such a talented guy, you know, and he's such a clever mind, you know. And I told him when we were down there, I was like, you know, whatever story you have to tell, you know, if none of this stuff that we shoot can ever be seen, and you still need the Menard character, I'll drive the 4 hours back down here just to shoot the stuff that you need to tell. You know, just because I have that much faith in what we're doing, and I believe in what we're doing that much. You know, and he kind of nodded, and he was like, no, I think we'll still shoot it the way we're doing it, you know, and even if we have to release it, you know, 30 minutes online, you know, the two 15-minute segments, you know, like we're supposed to, and then, you know, maybe release it, you know, the hour format, you know, at SoonerCon, just to kind of give them a treat there, you know, but I still think we'll do it the way we're supposed to do it, you know. I tell you, through the whole guideline thing, you know, I was so depressed with Star Trek, and I was so depressed with all the negativity from online, but Michael, you know, if there was anyone that was the most Starfleet officer-like, I would say it would probably be him. Like, you know, I'm not saying he's like a hero or nothing, but that guy is like he's like my captain. You know, it's kind of like when, you know, people look at Patrick Stewart, like, that's Captain Picard, that's our captain. You know, I tend to look at Michael the same way, you know. I'd follow that guy. You know, and like I said, if we weren't allowed to film any more Valiant, but Michael's like, hey, I still want to tell my story, let's film still, I'd be like, all right, I'll drive 4 hours. You know, I still would, because I have a lot of respect for that guy. You know, he, back in 2013, when he called me up and was like, hey, you know, I want you to be part of my film. You know, he took a chance on me, and I have always given it my all in every single thing he's put me in. And, you know, he didn't have to. And so I, if he ever has that moment where he's like, they said no, therefore we're going anyway. You know, I joined that little ragtag crew and steal the Enterprise, or in this case, steal the Valiant with him, you know, and I'd shoot the stuff, even if it's never seen. You know, I would still do that just because I respect him that much. So, yeah.
Very cool. And I have to ask, how was Menard fashioned? Chief Engineer Menard, was he at Menard's? And said,
huh. Isn't that his friend Jeremy's last name?
No. I'm not sure, but it's just kind of, because I remember in Grisham when we were talking with Richard Wells, and I don't know what they're going to do with Grisham now, but hopefully they can work something out.
I think they're fine.
But he mentioned, you know, like the navigator and the pilot were like TomTom, and one of them was another navigation system. But Menard's, for chief engineer, and the Menard's being a place where you go for construction equipment stuff, I didn't know if that was a play on words on Michael's part, or if you came up with that, or...
Well, no. Actually, they got my name. They actually got my name wrong. when he asked, hey, would you like to be in my film? I said, sure. He's like, I want you to be the chief engineer. I was like, awesome. I don't really care, because I usually wear red and blue all the time. So the fact that I got to be in red, I was like, great, fits my color scheme, so I can do that. I asked him, hey, have you found, do you have my character named yet? He said, no, not really. I haven't thought of that far ahead. I was like, can I name him? He's like, sure. So I thought, you know, I've always been the type of person that I want to give back to the people who, you know, who've, you know, given to me. So I thought of when I was a kid, I used to play Star Trek with my two friends, Eric Miner, or Eric Hubline, and Jeremy Minard, which Jeremy Minard is also the director of Melbourne. Okay. And so I was like, I took those two names, Eric for Eric Hubline and Jeremy Minard, you know, okay. Minard.
Gotcha.
So it was supposed to be Eric Minard. And so when I sent him the name, I said, hey, it's Eric Minard. And I even put in parentheses, my, M-Y, nerd. N-E-R-D. So I even put how to pronounce it so that it wouldn't be confused. And when I saw the original Valiant, you know, not the special edition, you know, but the original Valiant, which I have a voiceover in that at the very end, which all I say is engineering, which I sound so lame on that. Yeah, everyone calls me Menard, and I was like, "You son of a duh!" And so, but they mispronounced my name. So, like fast forward, like 8 months later, we do an Ajax / Valiant crossover, which still hasn't seen the light of day. But I actually play, that's the first time I play the character on screen, but I play the character annoyed because everyone's calling me Menard. And I play the character annoyed because I'm like, you know, everybody's, I play it like everybody's mispronouncing my name wrong, and that's why I'm annoyed. So, and everyone's like, why do you act annoyed? I'm like, because everyone's mispronouncing my name, and that's why I'm playing it. I really play the character closer to Dante in Clerks, where I'm not even supposed to be here today, because like everything's kind of falling apart for him, because we pass through this, well, I won't say it, but like everything's breaking, and I'm like, this is really Dante. Like, yeah, everyone's mispronouncing my name, my ship's falling apart, and damn it, I just want a pizza roll. And that, so like, if you look at my posts on Facebook from that timeline with my character, I'm always talking about pizza rolls. And like, yeah, so that's why, like, now sometimes when I talk about Menard, I always throw like a pizza roll reference in there. And one day, I just want to be on screen and have Menard officially eating a pizza roll. And I just, like, really cool. Cool, you know, so yeah, in my mind, Menard eat pizza rolls.
There you go. I think if that's going to be it, I'm going to close this one out early. So, because I want to shift gears, and I want to do that in another episode if you're willing, Vance, to stay on with us longer.
Sure, yeah, it's no problem, man.
I want to get back to Melbourne specifically and maybe some other fun stuff. But since this one's been kind of a heavy one and we're starting to get close to time and we're going to be doing a shift, I'm going to just go ahead and close her out. So, everybody out there, I appreciate everybody listening. Vance, we appreciate you coming on. You can find Vance's public Facebook page, Promenade, on Facebook. You can find Shadowstorm Studios on YouTube. Just look their channel up. You can find them there. Is there any other place they can locate you at, Vance?
Just look me up on Facebook, Vance Major Owen, even though my last name is not Owen. But yeah, look me up on Facebook. yeah, hit me up, man. I'm pretty accessible. So, yep.
All right. Well, we appreciate Vance coming on. Appreciate it again, sir. And we'll be back with you here in a little bit. So thank you again. We've been having fun visiting with Vance. Hopefully you've been having fun listening. We'll see.
Heck yeah, man.
All righty. Have a good one, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
See ya.
From your alien suitor, grab a neural brain, make it hot computer, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Deanna Troi is annoyed by her mother. If you feel sexy, Beverly Crusher, you'll find these 80s on the Enterprise. On the Enterprise, what a time to be a woman, equal to the guys. Tashi Yar, ranked a Klingon on the holodeck. Some stress with a vacation you will never want to. And that simulation Enterprise. Jean-Luc seeks advice from guiding, cause she's lived nine lives. Now she's serving drinks and dining. When you're on the bridge working with Commander Riker, bring him back to quarters and have an overnighter. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.